The race for the atomic bomb had begun more or less as a straggle. A few scientists, almost all European émigrés, were panicked in 1939 over the possibility that their former colleagues in Germany might take the lead in putting the discovery of fission to military use. They alerted the U.S. government to this danger, and the government supported conferences and small nuclear research projects. Committees of scientists did studies and wrote reports.
But it was not until the spring of 1941, more than 2 years after the discovery of nuclear fission in Germany, that Otto Frisch and Rudolf Peierls, German émigré physicists working in Britain, figured out how a usable atomic bomb could be produced quickly in time for use during the war.
From that time forward, everyone involved with the combined American-British-Canadian atomic bomb project was totally focused on winning this deadly race. Thoughts about the post-war implications of a nuclear-armed world remained dormant until December 1943, when Niels Bohr arrived at Los Alamos. Oppenheimer was enormously gratified to have Bohr at his side. The 57-year-old Danish physicist had been smuggled out of Copenhagen aboard a motor launch on the night of September 29, 1943. Arriving safely on the Swedish coast, he was taken to Stockholm, where German agents plotted his assassination. On October 5th, British airmen sent to his rescue helped Bohr into the bomb bay of an unmarked British Mosquito bomber. When the plywood aircraft approached an altitude of 20,000 feet, the pilot instructed Bohr to don the oxygen mask built into his leather helmet. But Bohr failed to hear the instructions. He later said the helmet was too small for his large head, and soon he fainted from lack of oxygen. He nevertheless survived the air journey, and upon landing in Scotland, he remarked that he had had a pleasant nap. Greeting him on the tarmac was his friend and colleague, James Chadwick, who took him to London and began briefing him on the British-American bomb project. Bohr had understood since 1939 that the discovery of nuclear fission made an atomic bomb feasible, but he believed that the engineering necessary for separating out U-235 would require an immense and therefore impractical industrial effort. Now he was told that the Americans were turning their great industrial resources to exactly this purpose. To Bohr, wrote Oppenheimer later, it seemed completely fantastic. A week after his arrival in London, Bohr was joined by his 21-year-old son, Awa, a promising young physicist who later would earn his own Nobel Prize. Over the next 7 weeks, father and son were thoroughly briefed about tube alloys, the British codename for the bomb project. Bohr agreed to become a consultant to the British, who then agreed to send him to America. In early December, he and his son boarded a ship for New York. General Groves was not happy about the idea of Bohr's participation, but, given the Danes' prestige in the world of physics, he reluctantly granted him permission to visit the mysterious Site Y in the New Mexico desert. Groves' displeasure had been sparked by intelligence reports suggesting that Bohr was a loose cannon. On October 9, 1943, the New York Times reported that the Danish physicist had arrived in London bearing plans for a new invention involving atomic explosions. Groves was incensed, but there was nothing he could do beyond trying to contain Bohr. This proved to be a hopeless task. Bohr was irrepressible. In Denmark, he had simply walked up to the palace door and knocked if he wished to see the king. He did pretty much the same thing in Washington, D.C., where he visited Lord Halifax, the British ambassador, and Supreme Court Justice Felix Frankfurter, an intimate of President Roosevelt's. His message to these men was clear. The making of the atomic bomb was a foregone conclusion, but it was not too soon to consider what would happen after its development. His deepest fear was that its invention would inspire a deadly nuclear arms race between the West and the Soviet Union. To prevent this, he insisted, it was imperative that the Russians be told about the existence of the bomb project and be assured that it was no threat to them. Such views, of course, horrified Groves, who was desperate to get Bohr out to Los Alamos, where the loquacious physicist could be isolated. To ensure that Bohr got there without breaking security, Groves personally joined him and his son on the train from Chicago. Caltech's Richard Tolman, Groves' science advisor, also came along. Groves and Tolman had agreed to take turns watching over the Danish visitor to make sure he didn't wander out of the compartment. After an hour with Bohr, however, Tolman came out exhausted and told Groves, "General, I can't stand it anymore. I am reneging. You are in the army. You have to do it." So as Groves listened to Bohr's characteristic whispering mumble, every so often he would try to interrupt and explain to him the importance of compartmentalization. It was an effort foredoomed to failure. Bohr had a broad overview of the Manhattan Project and an insatiable concern for the social and international implications of science.
Not only that, more than 2 years earlier, in September 1941, Bohr had met with his former student, Werner Heisenberg, the German physicist who led the German atomic bomb program.
Groves had debriefed Bohr about what he knew about the German project, but he certainly didn't want him to talk to others about it. "I think I talked to him about 12 hours straight on what he was not to say." They arrived in Los Alamos late on the evening of December 30th, 1943, and immediately went to a small reception in Bohr's honor hosted by Oppenheimer. Groves complained later that, "within 5 minutes after his arrival, he was saying everything he promised not to say." Bohr's first question to Oppenheimer was, "Is it really big enough?" In other words, would the new weapon be so powerful as to make future wars inconceivable? Oppenheimer immediately understood the import of the question. For more than a year, he had concentrated his energies entirely on the administrative details related to setting up and running the new lab. But over the next few days and weeks, Bohr sharply focused Oppie's mind on the bomb's post-war consequences. "That is why I went to America," Bohr later said. "They didn't need my help in making the atom bomb." That evening, Bohr told Oppenheimer that Heisenberg was working quite vigorously on a uranium reactor that could produce a runaway chain reaction and thereby create an immense explosion. Oppenheimer convened a meeting the next day, the last day of 1943, to discuss Bohr's concerns. Attending were Bohr, Awa, and some of the best minds at Los Alamos, including Edward Teller, Richard Tolman,
Robert Serber, Robert Baker, Victor Weisskopf, and Hans Bethe.
Bohr then tried to convey to these men the quite extraordinary nature of his encounter with Heisenberg in September 1941. Bohr recounted how his brilliant German protégé had received special permission from the Nazi regime to attend a conference in German-occupied Copenhagen. Though not himself a Nazi, Heisenberg was certainly a German patriot who had chosen to remain in Nazi Germany. He was undoubtedly Germany's most eminent physicist. If the Germans had an atomic bomb project, Heisenberg was the obvious candidate to direct it. When he arrived in Copenhagen, he sought out Bohr, and what the two old friends said to each other has become an enduring enigma. Heisenberg later maintained that he had guardedly mentioned the uranium problem and tried to suggest to his old friend that while a fission weapon was quite possible in principle, it would require a terrific technical effort, which, one can only hope, cannot be realized in this war. He claimed that he was implying, but worried about German surveillance and fearful for his own life, could not explicitly say, that he and other German physicists wanted to persuade the Nazi regime that it would not be feasible to build such a weapon in time for use in this war. But if this was Heisenberg's message, Bohr was not listening. All the Danish physicist heard was Germany's leading physicist telling him that a fission weapon was indeed possible and that, if developed, it would be decisive in this war. Alarmed and angry, Bohr cut short their conversation. Later, Bohr himself reported that he was not quite sure what Heisenberg had meant to say. Years later, he would compose numerous drafts, as was his habit, of a letter to Heisenberg that in the end he never sent. In all versions of the letter, it is quite clear that Heisenberg had shocked Bohr by merely mentioning atomic weapons. In one draft, for instance, Bohr wrote, "On the other hand, I remember quite clearly the impression it made on me when, at the beginning of the conversation, you told me without preparation that you were certain that the war, if it lasted long enough, would be decided with atomic weapons. I did not respond to this at all, but as you perhaps regarded this as an expression of doubt, you related how in the preceding years you had devoted yourself almost exclusively to the question and were quite certain that it could be done. But you gave no hint about efforts on the part of German scientists to prevent such a development."